So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety. Welcome to another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast. I'm Nate Larkin.
I'm David Hampton.
And here we are. I'm quite proud of us, David.
Yes.
We are hitting our stride. It seems like every week we're putting up a new episode.
We are.
Yeah.
And that was a goal.
And the and the calendar's filling up with wonderful guests. We got a great one coming up this week.
We do?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun one.
And I'm looking for a little bit of lift. I got to tell you, it's been a tough week for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not feeling as good, or
No, I'm still feeling great physically.
Okay, well that's good because I thought we were
No, much to my great disappointment. This not drinking thing is working real well.
And, and damn it.
And I am making it to the gym every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot more clarity and focus, getting some good writing done.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter how well we're doing. We still can't control life or life's events.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Much of this life still is tragic.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I did do the consult. This week for my brain scan. I told you I did the
brain mapping. Yes,
yeah,
for the neurofeedback.
With KK Ray. So I did the brain mapping 2 weeks ago, and mm-hmm. then this Tuesday had the consultation via the worldwide interweb with the doctor in New York City who read my brain
map. Dr. Stephens.
Right. And she was wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, she seemed to know me real well.
I tell people it's going to be either like going to a really high-tech fortune teller.
That's right.
Or having somebody read your tea leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you're going to think there really must be something to this physiology thing where the brain is doing some things that we had no idea.
Yeah.
They're calling the shots.
Yeah. One of the things that the scan picked up was that I have inhibitions around emotion.
Mm.
Big surprise there.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the addiction deal, right?
Right, yeah.
Right? And recovery. And I've made great progress in emotion, but still, there are feelings that scare me, mostly the ones that I perceive as negative.
Mm-hmm.
And grief is at the top of those lists.
Right.
It seemed like there was this succession of deaths that happened this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just out of the blue, people that I love dearly and are close to me.
Mm.
And, thank God. I mean, I didn't drink over it. I didn't act out sexually over it.
Yeah.
I didn't quite know how to feel the feeling. That still is,
mm-hmm.
I'm not fighting it anymore.
Right.
I just don't quite know how to encourage it.
Right.
I wish I had 90 days to spend with Chip Dodd.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Their work on feelings and helping us feel and giving us permission to feel. I relate to what you're saying. My mom has been ill for a while, and there are multiple factors and things that are going on, and she's in her early 80s, and she probably wouldn't want me to say that, but she also may not listen to the podcast either. But she's not doing really super well, and she's in the hospital, and we're having to make some hard decisions. And one of the things that I had a chance just to be with her by herself this week, and she said, you know, I'm not afraid of dying. I firmly believe that I am going to be in heaven, I'm reconciled, you know, all these things in her belief system that she has hope after her life. But she said, I can't get past the fact that I don't want to leave the people here.
Mm.
And I thought that was really honest.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because so much of us, we hope. We take our grief and we put it in this hope that everybody's in a better place or everybody's, you know, whatever. But we forget that the people that realize they may be moving on may not want to leave quite so fast, even 82 years fast. So when you're losing your friends like this week, I think those feelings are, we have to cull through a bunch of stuff to get to them sometimes, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm actually both dreading and looking forward to the funerals that I will attend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do have a sense that grief is best shared.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm hopeful that in those services I'll be able to get a little closer to this this feeling, which is part of love and part of caring.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the price of love, too, I think.
Right. You can't grieve if you didn't love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, wow.
And if you do love, grief is down the road someplace.
Yeah, it's there.
But it's the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
But given that today, friends, but it does segue well into Chip's time with us, because so much of the work he does is centered around our feelings and our feeling that we can't trust our feelings,
right,
or experience them, or we don't give ourselves that place, and therefore we medicate and them out and all those great things he's going to tell us about.
Yeah, and we're still trying to negotiate with our losses rather than accepting them.
Well,
with that, I think it's time to go straight to the conversation and bring in our guest. We'll be back in just a moment. Hang with us here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And we are back on the Positive Sobriety Podcast, and the long-awaited episode is finally here.
Absolutely.
Our Chip Dodd has appeared.
We have.
He's descended from heaven.
Secured.
Huh?
Secured the chip.
This is unknown stuff. I'm prepared.
Yeah, and he has brought with him Cynthia Henderson.
Right.
So, Chip,
who helped us secure Chip, by the way. Thank you, Cynthia.
Okay, very good.
You're certainly welcome.
Very good. I'm quite sure that many of our listeners are familiar with Chip. 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 Chip is the author of
Man of Many Names.
Whatever, whoever he is.
Of a very influential book, Voice of the Heart,
right.
That really has prompted so much conversation and opened up so many doors of insight and healing, not just here in Tennessee, but around the country. Chip is the founder of the Center for Professional Excellence, CPE, and now executive director, are you, of CPE Journey Pure, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Right. Yeah.
Welcome, Chip. Thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you, too, David. And Cynthia.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Well, one of the things we really like to do, Chip, is get a little personal right up front.
Okay.
You can remain clothed.
Thank you.
Yes. Said the lady in the room.
No. But tell us, how is it that you came to be involved in this field of addiction and recovery? What was the short version of the long and winding road that got you here?
Well, you know, the short version is a lifetime story, to be perfectly frank. And I grew up in a medical family, and at the same time, I grew up in around all the pressures of the professional world as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Then I ended up growing up in addiction, and ended up stepping in my own recovery in '88, thinking it wouldn't be me. You know, I mean, I saw it all.
Yeah.
But thank God, my father went into recovery in '82, got out, and ended up starting the Tennessee Medical Foundation's Physician Health Program.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so there's a storied, long storied past, and the very thing that it was our destruction has ended up being an extraordinary blessing. You know, so my own recovery, his recovery, and then me getting to participate over 30 years now in the recovery of, you know, lots and lots of wonderful people. So the negative is the positive.
Oh.
You know, the curse is the blessing if we surrender to the process of how things are made, you know.
So, isn't it beautiful to see how the ripples go year by year?
Astounding.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just astounding. And you know, they are... they're anonymous, but they—I can see the fruit.
Yes.
Without our names on it, without my name on it.
Yeah.
But I hear the fruit. I hear the fruit coming back.
Yeah.
I hear the echoes of what I've done before some years back. In terms of, I was doing a class for a residency program, and one of the men who was in the residency program came up to me afterwards. He's 23 or 24, maybe 25. And he said, hey, my name's so-and-so. He said, you treated my dad 20 years ago.
Wow.
Wow.
So those are the ripples.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he said, do you know so-and-so? I said, yeah. He said, well, I'm his son. Mm. And so I believe that very likely, maybe the kid would have become a physician anyway, but I think he'll be a healthier physician because of his father and the recovery. So, yeah, the ripples are astounding. And we end up affecting through the way we live, the way we genuinely live, mm-hmm. You know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah,
yeah,
know, so. Yeah, it's amazing.
I'd like to bring Cynthia into the conversation too, because we do have her here in the room.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you happen into this field, Cynthia?
Oh, mine was a very long and winding road. I grew up in an alcoholic family, although I didn't know they were an alcoholic family. It was my normal. I practiced law, became a full-time stay-at-home mom. And then got sober and got into this life, knew I wanted to do something with my recovery. And I've just been so blessed to be able to be put into a situation where I can take my law degree, my legal background, as well as my recovery, and put those things together to help other professionals then get the help they need.
Wow.
So, very grateful for that. Mm-hmm.
And Cynthia is a point person at Journey Pure with the Center for Professional Excellence, and she's kind of my go-to phone. she's more than a phone, a friend. So, you know, sometimes it's just help.
Yeah. And she is, if she's not connected to it already, she'll find the connection somewhere. I mean, you're pretty amazing, Cynthia.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. I love doing what I do, and I'm happy to be here.
I promo her every time I get a chance to the higher ups, right? We have higher ups,
yes,
and it doesn't hurt a bit. So.
Yeah.
Well, from what I know of your work, Chip, you spend most of your time with high-functioning addicts, men and women, or entirely men?
Well, our program has been it's exclusively men for 23 years. I'm very familiar with the man world.
Yeah,
recovering person, professional.
Yeah, right,
but women too, of course.
Yeah. But these are, so you work primarily with men who have the intelligence, the drive, the focus to achieve and excel in their field.
Amazingly, yeah.
Yeah, despite addiction.
Yes.
But at some point it unravels. At some point they hit a crisis. No guy just walks into your office because he woke up one day and thought maybe it would be time to, right?
We have never had a volunteer. Even the ones who claim they are, I volunteered for this. It's like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
And no one plans to ever meet me, so to speak. No
sure.
one ever plans to come to the Center for Professional Excellence. And what's amazing, you mentioned the high functioning. It's astounding how these professionals, to me, are the living proof that addiction is a sickness, that it's an obsessive compulsive, it's truly an illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't just have to come in the package of alcohol or drugs. It comes in the package of workaholism,
yes.
sex addiction, and obsessive thinking addiction, and so on. But it's astounding, the living proof of a person who's super smart, like you mentioned, super tough, plenty of willpower, and they have a moral purpose, or at least they're shooting towards some kind of perfectionism as a form of morality. And these three things, if these three things could get a person well, the professional of all people would be well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they don't have an intelligence problem, but they look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a weakness problem, but they look weak. and they don't have a moral problem because they know right from wrong, so to speak, and yet they keep doing the things they don't want to do. So what was so beautiful about what the voice of the heart introduces to them, and that I was introduced to, is that these people have a heart problem. They don't have a smarts problem. So we return them to, hopefully, return them to where we all started. And it turns out that, I mean, this is a weird way to say it, but when a human being comes into life, there are three things that are that the health professionals test. They're called the APGAR, and three characteristics. Will the child cry out, be afraid and hunger to connect? Will the child reach out, which is relational connection? And will the child suck in? Will the child be want what they want when they want it without any sort of like rules around it? And so we return a person to what humans are attracted to. We're attracted to people who can receive our tears and people who can receive our laughter. And the heart follows tears and laughter. And I know it's a weird way to say it, but I mean, life is lived between our ability to grieve and celebrate. The great poles of living. And if we can't grieve, we can't celebrate. If we don't ever dare celebrate, you know, we're never going to be open to grieving and those, you know. So we return them to living while at the same time they have all these extraordinary talents. So we kind of, we do a thing called, you know, they integrate. Become a person again who happens to practice whatever profession they do. So, and it's thrilling work. On one hand, it seems like we only treat the elite, but on the other hand, we treat the toughest of the tough because they're so in denial because they perform beautifully, but they're not getting the rewards of their performance. So, you know, they're doing everything right, and yet it's all turning out wrong. So they tend to stick with performance has to be the answer. And then once one of these guys, these beautiful people, get recovery, they end up turning around and fulfilling their lives by being fulfilled and also wind up getting the point of what they were after. They become people of maximum service, whether it's to their own children, to the marriage, or to starting a medical school. One of our guys was 74 years old, finished our program, and literally left, a retired surgeon, and became one of the main impetus people to start a med school. He literally started a medical school after after treatment.
That's awesome.
So that's positive sobriety.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just astounded. The heart is loaded with answers. You know, and yet our terror of vulnerability ends up becoming, you know, we hide out instead of crying out. So
I don't know how accurate this is, and if it isn't accurate, I'd love to have a word of correction so I can. I'm asked really quite often, what is it that Chip Dodd does? and my simple answer, my short answer is, he teaches men how to feel.
That's well put.
Yeah,
that's it. We help people feel their feelings, and it what's amazing is it sounds so complex in terms of all the knowledge that goes into what we all do here sitting in this circle. But it's still, for us, no matter how confusing the teaching is or how confusing the moment is, everything comes down to feel your feelings. And we talk about the eight feelings, not just reactions to feelings. Feel your feelings. Tell the truth about those feelings to someone who has them too. And then give it to the process. And then we bracket that with God owns the process. Or we can say give it to God and God takes you through the process. So feel your feelings, tell the truth, and give it to the process. And that is the answer. That's what I do. I used to tell my kids that they didn't know what I did. In fact, my youngest son was referring to his uncle who had a big construction firm. He said, "Dad, you don't work. Phil works." Because he could see it. He said, "All you do is ask people how they feel." He said, he's 8 years old. He said, "I could do that." I'm thinking, well,
maybe
you could.
It might be easier at 8 years old.
Exactly. He'd be more aware. And I would tell them, I help heal hearts. I mean, that's what I do. The literal part is it's a 90-day program for professionals. But we also do another thing called Sage Heal, which is really helping people see who they're made to be so they can do what they're made to do, which is my mission in life. I know I can't, I don't help people get smarter or tougher or more moral.
Right.
I help people return to the impetus to go do those three things or use what they already have for the benefit of themselves and others.
Yeah.
I really believe that life fulfillment's maximum service.
Yeah.
In a healthy way.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Right. Not the martyr, performer
right.
way.
Yeah. Chip, when you get someone in to the program, and a lot of professional people have been, sometimes we say the worst thing that can happen to an addict is success, and a lot of these folks have been, their very nature, their jobs and their professions foster the belief that they are very unique and special.
Yeah.
That they're, so one of a kind that, how did the company or the organization go before they came and wrote their shadow, cast their shadow on the scene, mm-hmm. How do you address, folks coming in at, certain income levels and certain backgrounds and having been this belief fostered with them that they are so unique and special in this field that they do, and yet, here we are, powerless over X, Y, and Z. How do you help them come to a place where this uniqueness, this terminal uniqueness, we would call it maybe, doesn't play into this thing with them, what you're doing?
It's an incredible question. The short answer, since we're doing podcasts,
mm-hmm.
One of the answers, the crash usually does it for them.
For you, yeah.
Which shatters the illusion that no one can do without me.
Mm-hmm.
And then also begins the awakening to the person's work mm-hmm. has become their worth.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all know this from your own
right.
work.
Sure.
But it's astounding. These professionals, their families will be suffocating,
mm-hmm.
Starving.
Mm-hmm.
And they will say, but I've never missed a day of work. Or
right.
this hasn't affected my work. But to the neglect of family. Mm-hmm. The proof that the work is the worth and the performance or the presentation is what matters. These people are terrified of not performing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only as good as their last performance. So the crash is the awakening. And recovery is something in the beginning that they will just do.
Mm-hmm.
Put quotes around. They just do it so they can get back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Along the way, our hope is that they will awaken to that their worth is who they are.
Yeah.
Starting with who they are. It's a returning to how they were made. And we have found that, there's a silly, if you've been to Disney World, the small world, it's a world of laughter and a world of
tears.
Tears, a world of
hope.
A world of fears and a world of...
I don't know. I got stuck on that ride.
But there, yes.
It's the seventh
You're kind of like
hell.
Stuck in that repetition over and over. It's a world of laughter, a world of fears, a world of hope, and a world of tears
right.
or fears.
Yeah.
But before you really realize it, we find that it's a small world when we
mm-hmm.
will go ahead and speak those things. And I have seen over the years the sort of like the wolf come into domestication.
Mm-hmm.
That do I dare believe? Do I dare risk? Do I dare take the chance that this thing that of what they're talking about is real?
Right.
That maybe there's more to me. My heart is not foolish.
Mm-hmm.
That I could be cared about for more than what I've done.
Yeah.
And I can be forgiven for what I've done as I wake up to regrets and all those things and sadnesses. But it's the crash does it, but the arrogance is amazingly still there until they come to humility.
Mm-hmm.
And the humility is, I'm human and so are you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, this is the Positive Sobriety Podcast. I know that when I entered the world of recovery, reluctantly, got kicked into it, to me, sobriety was a negative thing.
Yeah.
It's what I stopped doing. Nothing else really needs to change. Mm. Everything will be okay if I just stop that insane behavior.
Yeah.
And it turns out we have to learn a whole new way of life. It's a whole new way of being. Your program, one of the things that makes your program unique is that it is a 90-day program. Why so long?
That's a great question, too, because that is the one thing we're continuing to have to push back against, because the pressures to reduce the time, they're amazing, even mm-hmm. more so now than they were 10 years ago because mm-hmm. of managed care and insurance mm-hmm. and all these other things. But what we found out is that it does take time to heal. And then neurochemically, years after I started CPE and started doing the spiritual root system with people, the science is backing up mm-hmm. that it takes a certain length of time neurochemically for the brain, which is plastic, to make this little shift
right.
into sobriety is not a negative of what I don't do. It's something I get to have mm-hmm. in spite of where I've been. It's like a person awakens to saying yes to how they're made, which allows them to say no to what's mm-hmm. been harming them. I think it was Joseph Campbell said that we'll never say no to what harms us until we have something to say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the brain, the heart of the brain,
mm-hmm.
about, we found out it's usually about 70, 72 days. And if we work it hard,
mm-hmm.
work the feelings hard, something happens. There's this little switch where sobriety mm-hmm. is something that I'm grateful for. And then it takes another 12 to 20 days to round it out, to practice what I'm going to do with it,
mm-hmm.
to practice the challenges or the stresses. That's what we do, what's called therapeutic leaves. And people will go out for 3-4 days at a time, come back, and process their experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they have a home base to mm-hmm. return to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you help the family, Chip, prepare for this person that's going to come home who right. they have never met?
Yes. Yes. And then do I trust this person? And then some of them, I want the other person back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
I liked
it's too
you
scary.
When you did whatever.
Yeah. The recovery of the professional, recovery of a person who goes home actually arouses hope
mm-hmm.
in the other people in the house. And hope ends up being scary because they've gotten conditioned to survival.
Mm-hmm.
And when hope returns in terms of invitation, it's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
So they're more accustomed to the sickness than the salve or the healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do, we involve the family from day one.
Mm.
The invitation is as soon as the patient comes in the treatment, the spouse is contacted, the significant other is contacted, and that conversation begins immediately, starting with what's it been like, how are you, this is what we want to invite you to participate in, and we tell them to describe exactly what the program is. And most of them are thrilled to get the information, and then they can start to speak about the relief of their gratitude that mm-hmm. the pressure is out of the house in the person who's carrying it. And I will let the guys know, I mean, they're glad you're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's not you anymore there, the sickness is there.
Yeah.
And they're usually stunned by it, and, mm-hmm. and it helps awaken. And then the spouse or significant other starts to talk about, like, it's better. And then they deal with the shame and guilt of what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start sending them on therapeutic leaves. After the patient's done the first step
mm-hmm.
and moving towards the second step, we involve the family members to come in. Because if they come in before the first step has been done, the admitting powerlessness over the
right.
sickness and the lives are becoming manageable, if the spouse comes in before that, it's just a repeat of the same old stories, mm-hmm. resentments. You know the story yourself, mm-hmm. Cynthia. It's just same old, same old. But it seems crazy to wait 5-6 weeks before we start the actual
right.
face-to-face therapy. But even if a spouse is coming from Canada,
mm-hmm.
We'll fly them in for 3-4 days at a time. They go back out, hope to bring them back in again. Instead of just doing what's traditionally sort of a 3-day generalized sort of
cookie-cutter
weekend, mm-hmm. we do specific to that person. And we can because we're small. We only treat
right.
10 people at a time. So
still only 10 at a time?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes. Oh yeah. That's enough. We're barely hanging on to that these days.
Oh,
you know?
I imagine the pressure to expand that program has got to be enormous.
It is, and to shorten the time.
Yeah.
And we historically, it's one 10-minute phone call per week.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And I'm not even sure if we're following the federal guidelines anymore.
You know? Yeah,
the civil rights guidelines. I think we may be bumping up against those.
Yeah.
But we ask people to get themselves, return to mm-hmm. to you are, go find you again.
Yeah.
Because if you go back out and you're trying to do the phone, you're going to try to control or fix things, and you can't until you have yourself to do it with, you know?
Yeah.
So. Wow. Well, I wonder, this is a big ask. But I wonder if you could walk us briefly through that program. Maybe it's an explanation, the elevator explanation of the eight feelings. What is it that I, what are these capacities that I need to recover? This whole part of me that somehow got left behind or suppressed or denied. What are these abilities, these innate abilities that I have that I somehow have to reconnect with and relearn, and why?
You know, I'll the short version of that, when many of the people who come in for years, I'd tell them what we do as soon as they sit down for the first time. But I tell them in a way, it's been called a metaphor, and I know it is, but to me it's a living, breathing metaphor. Mm-hmm. It's a true description of what we want them to have. And I'll tell the patient, I said, you know, look, you're the captain of the cavalry.
Okay.
And you've come up against the edge of the Badlands, whatever that happens to be, the desert or whatever. I always somehow picture the Southwest, the desert, Sierra Madres, you know. Mm-hmm. And I say, your mission in life is on the other side of the Badlands. But every time you go out to go through, you can't get there, and you come back to the same place. So now you've come up against the desert, and you look down, and you see a little old fella sitting by the adobe. Mm-hmm. And you look down at me from your horse, and I'm, you know, kind of wafting the dust away from my face. And you say, hey, you know, old man, you know the way across these Badlands? And I'll say, I do. And then so there's a stalemate. Captain's like, well, you know, you're going to guess the question and what I'm asking, you know, but I haven't asked anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, yes, I do. And then the says, well, will you show me? I say, yes, but here's how it works. You're in charge, but I'm the guide. I know the way across, and you don't. And then I'll say, when you're ready to walk, we'll walk. When you're ready to run, we'll run. Said, and we'll run all day long, and you'll quit before I quit because I don't quit. And then I say, when it's time to go into the pit and to grieve your guts out, I'll hold the ladder to make sure there's a way out. When it's time for you to rest, you'll finally be able to shut both of your eyes, which you haven't done in years. Mm-hmm. And we will watch out over you, and we'll watch out for you so you can rest. We ask that you don't jump off cliffs. We're not going to run ahead of you, run behind you, or force you. But if you'll stay in the process, there'll come a time when we'll come up the last bluff. Mm. And you will see and feel something you haven't seen or felt since you were little. Mm. You'll feel a north breeze against your cheek, and you'll look out over the great vistas, and you won't be able to believe it. And you'll turn to me and say, well, where do I go? And I say, it's in your saddlebags. Mm-hmm. And wherever it is that you're made to be, they're waiting on you. Mm. They're already prepared for you to come. Mm. And the guy says, so is this goodbye? And I say, this is goodbye. And I'm going to watch you until you disappear into the prairie grass. And then I'm going to slide back down this gully and go back to my little house and wait until the next guy comes. And when I tell that story, I've gotten mocked. Mm-hmm. How many times you told that stupid story? You know, people have considered it trickery. But as you can hear it, even just spoken here, it speaks to something in us.
Yeah.
And what it's speaking to is how we're made. Mm. And we're made for connection. We're made to belong and matter. And the feelings are the doorway into articulating and experiencing how we're actually made. We're made to connect. We're made for relationship. And so the feelings, they're the specific literal feelings. I really believe, I know it sounds crazy and I get pummeled around for it, but I really believe that humans, we only have eight feelings. Mm. And then there are descriptions of those, like there are 52 colors of shades of green in Ireland. So I'm not saying there's one green. There are many shapes of green, many colors of green, but we have eight basic feelings, and it's the human language of emotion: sadness, hurt, loneliness, fear, shame, guilt, and gladness. Mm-hmm. And, so we reintroduce people that the feelings aren't negative. They're tools we've been given to be able to live fully in a place that's tragic, that hurts. Well, how come there's only one good feeling, gladness? Mm-hmm. But they're all good, because sadness brings us to being able to accept life on life's terms and live it fully anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sadness allows us to attach, because sadness is a feeling that tells us we can attach, because when we lose something, we care and we cry. Loneliness tells us we're in need of relationship. It brings us to intimacy. So it goes on like that. Fear brings us to wisdom, like being able to ask for help so we learn how to live life. Hurt brings us to healing, and anger brings us to passion, a willingness to be in pain for something that matters more than pain. Guilt brings us to forgiveness. Healthy shame brings us to humility, and gladness brings us to joy. The willingness to celebrate, knowing full well it's not going to last. Which is, you know, so feelings awaken us to how we're made, and they turn us towards needing each other. So we hope, we all are looking for a bypass, a way around living life on life's terms, which I get. I mean, I get hurt enough, I'm going to hide out. But we want to return people to the capacity to say, I am human, you are human, and I can't do this by myself. Will you help me? And may I help you? And man, it's so, like, you know, Aristotle said that a friend halves our sorrows and doubles our joys. And I tried doing it alone, and looked okay, but was there was an echo inside of me from, you know, being by myself in a big, large room called the world alone. And it wasn't working at all, you know. And I still struggle with a neediness. I know we talked earlier, my mother passed away last week. And her funeral is actually tomorrow. And a friend of mine said, you know, I'll see you at the visitation. And I said, oh, okay, I'll look forward to seeing you. He said, what do you need? And because I'm your friend. And I remember I felt teary. And I said, honestly, I need you to be at the funeral. And he said, well, I'll do it. I'll cancel all my work. And then I'm like, oh, no, you're canceling your work. I don't want you to have to do that. And then I'm like, you'll resent me, and you'll be pissed behind the scenes. And I had to do this. Chip's such a baby. I mean, going through all of those, you know, invectives against myself. Shaming myself. But the truth was, I want him there. I would like to turn and see this friend of mine with me at my mother's death, her burial. And then from that, I turned around and texted three more friends. I said I would be very honored. These were three childhood friends who've been with me for 50-something years. And I said I'd be very honored if you could be there at my mother's funeral, just so I could turn and see them. It's almost like an acknowledging that we have lived life together. And let's honor the passing of it, you know, together. And the celebration of it, and the togetherness in it, and the memories of each other in it. So it's a struggle to do that, because I'm really asking for people to stop their days and please be with me. You know, and that's much of what I've spent my life running from. And still, it's hard for me sometimes to find, you know, the friend said, what do you need? And I was, well, I need for you to be okay. So we'll be friends. Because if I need anything from you, we're in trouble. So I think returning to needing each other and letting go of the toxic shame, or walking through the toxic shame and then letting go of pride. And returning to a tolerance for vulnerability. Because I think addiction, if I had to boil addiction down to one short phrase, I would call addiction an intolerance for vulnerability.
That's great.
Wow, does that unzip it?
Doesn't it? It really does. I mean, it's a way to find a success or fulfillment in life without having to pay the price of feeling or needing, you know? So it's like intolerance for vulnerability. It's like, and which means there's a lot of addiction out there. I think it's the nation's and the world. I think it's the United States of America's number one. Absolutely, biggest problem.
And what triggers that so often is traumatic experience. Which says that vulnerability is potentially fatal. Right. So I get a message early on.
Big time.
What role does trauma play, and the awareness of trauma and the healing of trauma play in the therapeutic process at CPE?
Well, I do not believe that a person, and I know there's, you know, in the psychiatric world, I'm about to blow apart the sacred text. But I believe trauma is much more widespread and much more real than the mental health world labels it to be. And I do not believe a person can become addicted unless they're traumatized first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's possible.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because it's a feelings disorder.
Right.
Yeah.
And trauma freezes our feelings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or makes us ashamed of them or run from them. So, in fact, it's been so funny. Our medical director at Journey Pure, it makes it very widespread known that he's a graduate of CPE.
Right? Yes, he does.
So I can speak to him. And he said, you know, it said, Chip, it drove me crazy. I came to treatment for addictions treatment, and you guys didn't talk much about drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about, we trusted the process of, you know, the 12-step meetings and so on. Mm-hmm. Of course, we taught addiction and so on. But we were going after the origins of addiction,
right?
Which is the trauma.
Right.
And we're going after what happened to you that you lost contact with the heart of who you are,
mm-hmm.
and then we move towards getting it back,
yeah.
healing the freezing, frozen places,
mm-hmm.
going into the things we're running from, taking the risk through connection and trusting the people outside of you,
mm-hmm.
to be with you while you go through it, and the heart is awaiting return,
mm-hmm.
Restoration.
Mm-hmm.
The heart awaits coming back to life, but do I dare hope again? Do I dare need again? Do
yeah.
I dare?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're asking people to dare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To dare to hope. And this is what makes it so, that's why we're small, because we're asking people to do the one thing they vowed they would never do again.
Mm-hmm.
Take the risk of hoping vulnerably.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you care about me? Do I really matter?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And if we're lying, you know, if we're playing the therapy game or mm-hmm. whatever that carnival barker mm-hmm. thing is that, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen many times, mm-hmm. you know, then we're doing something very harmful, because we're asking these people to take the risk of hoping again and it being real,
mm-hmm.
it being true,
mm-hmm.
In spite of how many times they've hoped before and it turned out with ashes in the hands or, you know.
Yeah.
And that to me is what heals trauma, taking the risk of hoping again.
Yeah.
I remember there was when we treated men and women years and years ago. And if I'm going too long, just give me a cue.
No, you go.
But this wonderful woman was in my office, and I said, I know how horrifying it may be for you, but you're not foolish to hope.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of everything that's happened, horrible traumatic mm-hmm. background. And I was sitting so that she had easy access to the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's very, very important for mm-hmm. people to have access to the door,
right,
in the therapeutic room. But she said, I would like to reach across here and slap your face off.
Mm-hmm.
You know? She said, I hate you. And I remember just saying, I know and I get that. And hoping is terrifying. And
yeah.
Yet you're made for it. And then she began to weep. And but hating hope,
mm-hmm.
and we were having room to hate hope because the hope is in her and she can't get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we end up hating ourselves because of we can't get rid of this human thing in us mm-hmm. that can't stop wishing except to numb it, anesthetize it, and despise it. But what's amazing is the tears or the grieving, the trauma
mm-hmm.
and grieving mm-hmm. that I'm looking for a life I can't find. And every time I've reached for it, she's bumped into somebody who robbed her.
Yeah.
Of her worth and her yeah. value. So anyway, that process, it opens the door to that process. And by connecting with other humans who are not like those people before,
mm-hmm.
We find the reconnection and the healing and the
yeah.
healing from trauma. And with trauma healed, we can feel. And addiction also is an attempt to connect
mm-hmm.
how we really are made
mm-hmm.
without having to do it through humans
mm-hmm.
and God or yeah. through vulnerability.
Yeah.
So trauma is essential. Trauma healing is essential.
Yeah. And you guys are offering an empathetic witness to their pain, you know,
yeah.
so they're being engaged in a way that they, you know, they feel loved and
yeah.
connected and all that.
Have the right to be in the process with them because we know.
Right.
You've
got the cred.
Done it. Yeah. Yeah. which is wonderful. You know, the yeah. very thing that was so terrible is like, oh, okay, I've got rights.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like, you know, the fact that, like, even where Cynthia's role is different than yours, but she's been in recovery and knows this deal, so that even when people start to spin out at the level that she's trying to engage them to get them interested in what you guys are about, she knows the drill.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important. And like, as this may be a question for you, Cynthia, how do you all let each other, or not let each other, but let people know about what you are doing there and that you exist in the professional world?
Well, I travel and see monitoring programs, physician health programs, lawyers assistance programs in different states, mm-hmm. and just let them know about our program. Once I bring them in, they meet Chip and the rest of the team. My job's pretty much over because mm-hmm. they know that they're the real deal. And then when I have, if like they refer someone and they call me, if I feel like it's appropriate, then I share a little of my story to let mm-hmm. them know that, yes, I've been where you are. Mm-hmm. I know what you're walking through right now. Mm-hmm. And I've walked through it. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the other side of that mm-hmm. now. And mm-hmm. I'm walking a different road. Mm-hmm. It looks a little different, and mm-hmm. it's much healthier. Mm-hmm. And I can share that with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't do it with everyone. I do it just when instinctively I feel like it's appropriate. And yeah. It has, I've had so many people say, oh, my God, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I do.
Yeah.
So I'm able to use that within me to then share with other people to give them hope. Mm-hmm. That they too can walk through this.
Right.
So,
And you're not selling, you're offering.
Right.
I mean, I've listened to you and, you can't help it. And if they're looking for something, then they've got a chance.
Right.
You know, that's you're handing that. And you know how often, you know, like we're sitting here and David, you and Nate, you said something about me earlier, you know, who being known, it's like mm-hmm. you guys, what you guys have doing and have done to bless and help and aid and serve other people. It's astounding what mm-hmm. Cynthia's doing. And what's amazing is the whole recovery process, we would never have met each other.
Right.
Right.
And I'll tell the guys in treatment, it's like, even if I had met you on the street, we would never have known each other.
Right, right.
I'm so privileged to get to know you.
Yeah.
Because yeah. this doorway that is our horror ends up being this incredible opportunity and we can tears and laughter we get to do what life's about and my son Nate you went to was at a university, and because you and I had met mm-hmm. through recovery, he was in a class and heard you start talking.
Oh, wow.
And you heard his name, and you said, I know your dad.
Yeah.
And y'all started talking, and he came into the field, finished up two master's degrees, and is now working in the field.
Fantastic.
And so, I mean, it's amazingly connected.
Yeah,
that's great.
And there is quite a staff that is now gathered around you. A lot of those guys have come through the program, haven't they?
It seems maybe like a nepotistic thing, but yeah. I want people who know what we're doing,
yeah,
and who believe in what we're doing,
yeah,
and are teachable to keep growing in what we're doing. So, mm-hmm. I have, I would say, 95% of all the people who I've gotten to work with over the past 30 yeah. years are graduates of CPE.
Oh, that's awesome.
After they've been out and have done their thing. You
right.
know, it's
yeah.
not like a dependency thing. It's and a lot of people have left and said, I want to do whatever I got to do to get back here to get to work with you guys. And we have an extraordinary network of we're connected. Like a former graduate just took over a residency program in addiction for a major teaching medical school.
Oh, fantastic.
So, I mean, we can bring the sort of the help and the answers to those places. And mm-hmm. so.
Well, so what are the best ways for our listeners who really might be, their interest is piqued, or maybe it's more than that, they feel a rising sense of need, desperation. What's the best way for them to connect with your network to start a conversation that may wind up at
837-2282. And I'll say
that number again.
Yeah, 615-837-2282. And it's 615-837-2282. But but the reason I stress that number is because when we joined Journey Pure, they're big and we're little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have a number that has been sort of like direct access into talking to our office administrator. Mm-hmm. Her name's Karen Carnes. And we I mean, it's very personal. So she, you know, if you don't reach Cynthia, but that 837-2282 is the number we've tried to hang on to because we had it for 23 years.
Yeah.
And so it takes us straight to Karen's phone.
Okay.
So Karen picks up the phone and answers the questions.
Wow.
And then she will turn around and ask Phil Herndon, who's our clinical director, and he and I have been working together for 16 years now. And there are lots of jokes there in terms of like how sick I am of him and he is of me. Somebody say we're like an old couple.
Yeah. You know, so,
Archie? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we want to be as personal as possible. You don't call us and we start getting your data to check your insurance out.
Yeah, yeah,
we,
yeah.
We talk to you, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
And find that out first. Yeah. It's very relational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, I just can't thank you enough for...
And I can't thank you enough either. And you too, David.
Well,
truly,
you.
What you guys are doing and what you've done.
Yeah. Well, it's a privilege, isn't it?
Yeah.
To throw another metaphor on the pile, I really do feel like I wound up in a big lifeboat with some wonderful people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're engaged now in pulling other people out of the soup. And I just love doing it.
Rowing towards the Titanic. That's what I described the other day. We're rowing towards it, not away from it. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great metaphor. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, once again, thanks for joining us. And listeners, hang on. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And Nate, wow, that was such a great conversation because, I always enjoy getting to talk to Chip a little bit, but he puts things in such great word pictures and stories and ways that people can access what it feels like to be in that moment.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I get the sense when I'm with Chip that he could talk for 90 days and not repeat himself.
No.
I
wouldn't get tired of it.
No.
Yeah.
What a sweet man.
He is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Cynthia coming in, too, was really a treat. She's been a dear friend of mine for a while, and I just feel like it's so important for people to know that when they reach out to a group or when people like Cynthia go out and let people know about a service that someone's offering, that they're encountering recovering people, even in the people that represent the service.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, just, she's not a random PR face.
And I really think this partnership between CPE and Journey Pure is a very good thing. Mm-hmm. I think it benefits both organizations. It takes the strengths of both, and it's going to create something new and even better. So it took me a bit by surprise when I heard that CPE was joining Journey Pure, however that thing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a unique coming together, and I'm glad they did because, you know, the facility at Journey Pure in Murfreesboro, Tennessee is so at the river. They have multiple locations throughout the country, but at the Murfreesboro, they call it the river. And it's a cottage. It's like a lodge with a lot of cottages.
Oh, okay.
And it's on the river, and there's a beautiful...
Is it on the stones?
I don't know the name of that little river that runs through the property, but and then of course they've got horses and ropes courses and labyrinths and all the things that
that any self-respecting treatment center should have, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
But to go and just have the opportunity to soak up the exercises and the work that Chip and his staff are going to present to you in an environment that is. Really beautiful and a great place to just think.
Well, another associate of Chip's is going to be on in a couple of weeks, correct?
Yes, Dr. Stephen Lloyd.
Okay, that's great. And I can tell you our guest next week is going to be the comedian Jeff Allen.
Oh, good.
Okay.
That's fun.
Well, until next week, I guess we'll have to wrap this one. I'm Nate.
I'm David.
And we are your pals on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rex Schnelli, music by Rex Schnelli. Theme music by Matt Ulrich. Hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett. Wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.